What's up, guys? Welcome back to the East Coast Podcast. On episode 3, we're going to be talking to Ryan Albright, founder and CEO of Covered Bridge Potato Chips from Heartland, New Brunswick. Be sure to subscribe to the channel and smash that like button. We've got regular episodes coming at you every month, so stay tuned. On this episode, we're going to be talking about East Coast chips, how this all started, where they're sold, how it happened, and our next flavor of chips releasing very soon. With no further ado, let's welcome in Ryan Albright. How's it going, Ryan?
Hey, Alex. How you doing today?
Good, man. Thanks a lot for coming on the East Coast Podcast.
Absolutely. Glad to be on. I guess it'd be better if I was down in Halifax. Maybe when the bubble lifts, I'll definitely get down.
Soon enough. Well, cheers from Nova Scotia to New Brunswick, man.
And just an FYI, Alex did not send me a case to have on set today.
Yeah, they're coming.
I'm super disappointed.
The carrier pigeon's on the yeah. way. They'll be there
that
soon.
That darn Canada Post is so slow, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, no, we got the new hard iced tea on the way to our friends at Covered Bridge. So we just released this one and stoked to hear what you guys think over there in New Brunswick.
I'm super excited to try it. I love iced tea, so I'm pumped to try it out. Can't wait to get it in New Brunswick.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's just hitting the shelves now at the ANBL store, so you should have it for the whole summer.
Oh, nice. So it's already out. It's already in the stores in Nova Scotia now?
Today's the first day. Today's the actual first day we were told that it'll be on the shelf. So I'm going to have to send you a whole bunch of them for this whole summer to keep you hydrated.
Yeah, well, I do have a tiki bar, so it's going to take quite a few.
Oh, there we go. That's awesome. Well, why don't we dive right in? I'd love to hear where you grew up and like kind of what it was like for you growing up there.
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Woodstock, New Brunswick. And been here my whole life. We come from my brother and I come from a fourth generation family potato farm, so we're the fourth generation. But it was started by my great grandfather in the 1920s, and then my grandfather took that over in the 40s. My dad actually, before he came back to the farm, he was in insurance, and you know, he did that for 7 or 8 years, and he didn't like sitting in an office every day, which, you know, can get to be a long day. It's nice to be out working with your hands and out in the sun or the rain or whatever. And, yeah, so he came back to the farm in the 70s, late 70s. And then, my brother and I took over the farm operation in 2005, 2006 in that time frame. But, before we actually took over the farm, we started our own potato brokerage company. And that's kind of how we got first started. I was about 23, 24. My brother was 20, 21. And so, you know, when we first started doing that, it was a lot easier because all I needed was, you know, a cell phone and pen and paper, and you'd buy potatoes and we'd resell them. And did that for a few years and was able to, you know, to build up enough equity to buy the farm and to start Covered Bridge. But it's been a long time ago now. I mean, 2003, we started that first company, and a lot of the companies we sell to were potato chip companies. And that's how we really kind of got more interest in starting our own potato chip plant, was from selling to other potato chip companies. And we saw an opportunity in Canada. There's only like three real big potato chip companies in Canada. And we saw an opportunity to come out with a unique and different item and create some brand awareness around the longest covered bridge in the world here in Heartland. You know, it's 1,282 feet long, and we get 100,000 people every year to come to see the bridge. And it's only in a little 850 person town. I mean, kind of like, you know, Piggy's Cove down near you. I mean, they get a, you know, hundreds of thousands of people every year to come and see landmarks like that. And for us, it's a big landmark here in New Brunswick, and it's right beside us. So, you know, we designed our building around tourism. So a lot of those buses that come to see that bridge every year could come to see our factory and see how we make chips and sample fresh chips off the line, which I know you've had.
Oh yeah, I love them. Yeah, it's an amazing town there, Heartland. I love to see that covered bridge too. We went and got the full experience. We got to drive over the bridge and take some photos with it on either side. And it is a beautiful town there in Heartland. So I don't question why you chose that as your business location. But overall, how has it been in the rise and grind through Heartland, New Brunswick? How's the town been with you guys?
It's good. You know, we, you know, definitely as we keep growing our business, we're definitely in need of more people, more employees. So that's, you know, that's definitely been a challenge to try and get, because we're in such a small geographic area, but we have a lot of big businesses in our area as well. So it's definitely the main resource that we need is, you know, is people. And, you know, as we grow, that continues to be a little bit of a challenge for us for sure.
How many staff would you be at now?
You know, it goes up and down, but we're probably somewhere around 130 people right now. So it's a long ways off from when we first started. You know, when we started making chips, it was just myself and plant manager, marketing manager at that time. And, you know, we cook for 2 or 3 hours. I'd put 6 cases of chips and a wooden rack in my Toyota Corolla and go set a store up, come back, built the car again, set another store up. And I think probably when I get around 35 or 40 stores, I bought an old cube truck and then I ran that for a week or two myself and then hired, or maybe longer, and then hired somebody to run the distribution truck for us. And then we kind of just kept incrementally growing it, you know, from there.
Where would you say you got your entrepreneurial spirit from?
You know, that's, you know, people ask me that a lot actually, and it's a hard thing to really peg. You know, my grandfather, my father really instilled a hard work ethic in me. I mean, we're expected to work as kids growing up and, you know, maybe didn't get paid at first. And then later on, you know, we started getting a, you know, a paycheck, an hourly paycheck, but we were always on the farm. You know, I got home on the bus, you know, we lived right on the farm. So my dad was working, I was out with my dad and my grandfather. And so it just always worked. And I think that work ethic is the, you know, one of the big things as an entrepreneur that you have to have, and because it affects and helps your drive to keep pushing forward. But then when I look around, there's a lot of entrepreneurs in our area that have been very successful over the years. You know, McCain's is a great one. It's only 15 miles, 20 miles from us.
Yep.
But there's a lot of other local big businesses, trucking, metal industries that have started from, you know, some scratch and growing their business. So, you know, I think this just by looking around at other companies and what they've been able to achieve is a big driver for sure.
So why did you choose to go with Kettle Cooked Chips?
Actually, when I first started, when I was 20, 21, I wanted to make my mark in something. I didn't know what it was. And I looked at a lot of different things that I could do to get into business because I was just working for my father at the time. One of the first big ones I looked at was potato vodka, believe it or not. I spent an entire year developing potato vodka, but I never went through with it. But actually, my friends Richard and Devin Strang that own Blue Roof Vodka, they've got a great premium vodka they developed in near before you cross the bridge to go to PEI. So that was my first big one that I did, and then as I got selling potatoes to other potato chip companies throughout Canada and the U.S. One thing I realized was there was no sweet potato chips in Canada and there was no dark russet potato chips. And so the russet that we use is the same variety that McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, any of the big French fry manufacturers that they use. So it has a little bit higher sugar content. It'll make it fry up golden to dark in color. And it's got a very unique, distinct flavor profile. And that's one of the things that makes our chips really addictive is the that really distinct flavor that comes with the russet. And so we saw an opportunity by being unique and different. And that's everything we do. You know, we never come out with just the same product as everybody else. We want to make sure every product we come out is totally unique, totally different, and offers the retailer something different than what they have on the shelf and the consumer something different to buy.
Is it your great-grandfather that started it in the 20s?
Yeah, my great-grandfather, he was a shoemaker and working for another potato farmer on the side. And then he wanted to start his own potato farm. So he went from fixing shoes to starting his own potato farm.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, my great-grandfather never actually drove a tractor. And I've told the story before. So my grandfather's told me these stories. He told them me many, many, many times too. But his father never drove a tractor. And then in 1940, my grandfather bought our first tractor And my great grandfather refused to ever drive it. He would only use horses, and that's it.
Oh, wow. Old school. I've seen that tractor right over front. That's the iconic one that's right outside of Cover Bridge Factory, right?
Yeah, we've got a couple old trucks that we kept, and they're out front. We keep them on display. Actually, we've got an old wagon that we're trying to get ready to put out there this summer. It's the horses used to pull these wagons, and that's what you'd put the barrels on. So it was called a barrel wagon. They would haul them from the field in the harvest to the cellar of the house, because it was the basement of the house where we used to store the original potatoes. So they had a hole in the chute, and they would dump the barrels down a chute and into the basement. So picture, you know, cooking your breakfast and your lunch and everything in the house and sleeping in your bed, and underneath you was a basement completely full of potatoes.
Is that just for like the longevity of the potatoes, this cold storage?
Yeah, it's cold storage, you know. And later we built our first potato house in at where our farm is now in 1955. So we built a nice big, you know, potato house with multiple bins instead of using the cellar of the house.
Wow, that's awesome. And is anyone still using that kind of potato house system anymore or no?
So now you have large, big industrial potato warehouses that are, you know, climate controlled, humidity controlled. We control the CO2 in there. It's all uncomputerized. And so it's very automated now.
Wow, very cool. And tell us a bit about the process, from how long it would take to grow a potato to how long it would take to really create a bag of chips with the thousands and millions of pounds of potatoes that you would work with.
Yeah, so actually we're in the middle of planting right now. Unfortunately, we had a half an inch of rain this morning, so we can't plant today. We're almost done. We only have about 60 acres left, so maybe a couple days left of planting, and we'll be done. From the time we plant, as soon as we're done planting, let's take a step back. We have to cut the seed first, so we have to cut the seed into small pieces. And you need one eye that's on the potato in order to germinate and grow new potatoes. When we plant them, maybe a couple weeks after they're in the ground, we go through and we use a potato cultivator to shape a bigger hill over the row. And that helps keep the sunlight off the potatoes as they grow in the row. It gives lots of room in the dirt for the potatoes to grow and get big. And then throughout the summer, we let them do their thing. They grow. And then around the middle to late September, we start fall harvest. And it usually takes us about 3.5 to 4 weeks for fall harvest. And those potatoes will go into our storages, and they're literally in our storage for almost 12 months. Like, if we put our potatoes in around the middle of September, the last ones usually come out sometime in the first to middle of September. They're usually in there for one full year.
Jeez, that's a long time. So why would you hold them for that long? Is it more like the potato needs that for the next step, or is there a reason behind it?
Well, we're one of the few manufacturers that have a 12-month supply right here. Other potato chip companies in the U.S., they use different varieties of potatoes, and they use potatoes in storage up until May, and then they start bringing potatoes from Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, all places where they just harvest them out of the field and they can process them. But with our process, we prefer to have our potatoes come from storage so we can control to get the right golden to dark color that we want to achieve and the right quality.
Very cool. So when you think back on those early days when you were selling potatoes to other potato chip companies, and you went and took that huge leap of faith and you decided to get your own factory and your own machinery and invest in Heartland, New Brunswick, what was that like for you as a young entrepreneur?
Some days I laugh about it because I look back and sometimes I wonder how we ever even like got it kind of off the ground. It was there was times there, you know, where within a day or two it would have kind of fallen apart on us. Even securing the land we're on, I think we had $500,000 spent here on site before we even had a deed to the property, so we could get a mortgage from the bank to actually, you know, keep going to get everything set up. So it was pretty, you know, nick and tuck there at first to get everything going. And, you know, sometimes when I look back, I just try to self-reflect a little bit on all the, you know, I wouldn't say hardships, but any of the things that were tough in the time, you know, you look back and it's actually rewarding, you know, whatever the tough situation was, you know, it's rewarding today that, you know, you got through that challenge, you moved on, now you've got a new challenge, because there's always something new every day. It's never the same same challenges. Well, sometimes you have the same ones, but you know, challenges can still be very rewarding.
Absolutely. They're probably one of my favorite parts of the ride too, is just getting over those big obstacles. And what were some of the obstacles that you would have faced in those early days?
Once we actually got the building up, you know, some people ask, well, who's your first contract? Well, we never actually had a contract at all. We literally built the factory without having one bag of chips sold. So we cooked, those first few months where we were doing product development, and we went to put the first bag of chips out, which the first bag of chips actually went to a place down your way. It's called Goody Baskets. And they do little baskets for going to hospital or what have you. And I still have the receipt frame downstairs in our gift shop. That was December 8th. We sold them small bags. That was our first customer.
Wow, that's awesome.
But yeah, when we go through, it was one of the first big obstacles was definitely, I always thought, when you get a bag of chips, I hated to have the bag half full of air or three quarters full of air. So I said, I'm going to make mine very, very full. But by doing that, what I didn't take into account is something called specific gravity, which affects, in essence, how full that bag of chips is going to be from the makeup of the potato. And also, when potato chips get shipped, they settle in the bag, so they settle down. The long and short of it, when we first started, the chips wouldn't fit in the bag. So I had to get on a stool in front of our packaging machine, and 50 bags a minute, I had to shake every small bag like this, every small bag for hours on end to get so we could use the film up and get. And then after that, we had to make new bags and print new bags. But we did this for months and months.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was definitely a hard lesson out of the gate.
Wow, that's amazing. And what was the first flavor of chips that you guys released?
Our first one was sea salt. And then we did sea salt and cracked pepper, barbecue and sweet potato. Those were our first core items. And we have on our sweet potato and on our sea salt, we actually have one of the first original bags of chips that come off the line in back. We're going to put it on display in the gift shop. But so they'd be 12 and a half years old. So I'm sure they're still fresh.
Wow. Hell yeah. I'll have to give them a go sometime.
yeah. Wash those down with the new iced teas.
Oh yeah. So I'd love to know more about like the vodka path that you touched on, because I don't know much about vodka and how it's created, but it comes from potatoes, doesn't it?
You can have it from different, you can have it from potatoes, from corn, basically anything you can still. Potatoes is obviously what I wanted to do because I wanted to take value out of potatoes that we were growing. And the Strangs, that's what they did. And they have a very, very premium vodka. And it's got like a little bit of a floral aroma. And that's from the potato distilling. But some of the best premium vodkas in the world are still from potatoes.
Wow. Do you think we'll ever see a Covered Bridge vodka?
Well, I don't know. I'd be my best customer for sure.
I think it would sell really well. People love your potatoes and your chips and your popcorn, and we'll get to the popcorn in a bit, but I think the vodka would do really well for you guys.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very cool.
We're definitely always looking at, line extensions. I mean, especially in the snack world, like we've got new items coming out and, different ideas and different things that issues have got too many ideas. So it's trying to execute one at a time and do it properly and successfully.
How many new concepts or new flavors would you guys be releasing in a year?
Under our brand, we try to keep it fairly limited, maybe 3 to 4 kind of items or new product lines a year. This year we had a few more than that, but if we get too many at once, it's just hard to manage, at the retail, with our distributors and with our retailers. And so we try to be strategic about it. And usually the team tries to keep me in line because I get too many ideas. And so it's good that somebody kind of keeps me under wraps a little bit.
Yeah. And tell us about the popcorn, because I've seen the popcorn all over the shelves, and it was a new thing that I didn't know you guys. How many years have you been in the popcorn game?
We've been 3.5, 4 years now with popcorn. The challenge is if we have one rack in a store, for instance, if there's a rack store near you and has a rack for chips, we try to keep our core 6 chip items on there. So we sell the most per square foot on that rack. It's not until we get a secondary rack that we'll add other chip items and popcorn to it. So you won't always see it everywhere, which is unfortunate, but we only have so much space at store level, so we have to be selective about what we put there.
Very cool. And tell us about the process from start to finish with the popcorn and how that all works.
So the popcorn, we bring in the raw corn. We have 6 kettle poppers, and we have 3 more coming. We bought 3 more bigger kettle because we've been really busy with our popcorn. It's been growing really quickly. Basically, they'll dump, they'll fill up a tub with the raw corn. If we're doing sweet and salty, they'll add the raw cane sugar in there. And then they will dump that into the kettle with the oil. We use coconut oil for our brand, so we use raw coconut oil. And as it pops, the sugar actually melts down, and then it froths. And then as the popcorn is popping and turning in the kettle, it'll coat the popcorn with the sugar. Once it's done, they'll dump the kettle onto the conveyor. It goes through a big sifting drum that removes all the small kernels and small pieces. Then it'll go through a tumbler where we put the pink Himalayan salt on. And then it goes up through onto our scales to be weighed, and then into the bag, and then the box.
Oh, yeah. Love it. Delicious popcorn, by the way. We absolutely love it.
Thanks. It's the same as the rest of our product. You know, it's non-GMO. It's all natural, better for you. Some of the fun things that we do with our popcorn that I believe we're the only ones in Canada is our butter. Our butter popcorn, we actually melt 50-pound blocks of clarified butter down, and we developed our own spray system to spray the butter on. So you actually get real melted butter on your popcorn, just as if you were making it at home.
That's a secret sauce right there.
That's right.
So what would the top seller be in the popcorn, and what would the top seller be in the chip category?
So in popcorn, they're pretty close, but you'd have your sweet and salty, our jalapeno cheddar, and our movie butter are all pretty close. But in the chip category, sea salts are number one, and then our salt and vinegars are number two for sure. The salt and vinegar is unique because most salt and vinegar chips, when you have one, it'll just make your eyes water, you know, your tongue curl up and your cheeks pucker. And a lot of people really like that, but there's a lot of people that were really on the fence of not liking or liking salt and vinegar chips. So what we did was we developed it a little lighter, and we put raw cane sugar in the blend. And what it does, it sweetens the back of your palate. Like, you get that sourness, but then it sweetens up at the back end. And we've really hit a big demographic of consumers that were really on the fence with salt and vinegar.
Oh, definitely. People love that salt and vinegar shift. It's huge. And for distribution, like, how have you acquired so many stores? Like, you're in thousands of stores across North America. How have you really grown from those early days to now being across North America?
So in the Maritimes, we have our own fleet of trucks. And that started literally just one truck at a time, one truck locally here, and then Moncton and Fredericton. And we just kept adding one until we were up to 5 or 6, 7. And then we added 5 all at one time. And then we added 3 more in Newfoundland. Newfoundland was definitely a challenge. We were there 2.5 years with our en route trucks, and we ended up bringing them home. It was just really challenging for us geographically to, you know, drive so far and drop off just a little bit of product. So we pulled back from Newfoundland. In the Maritimes now, we have a fleet of our own trucks that service around 1,200 stores. The rest of North America and the rest of Canada is all done through other small distributors and large distributors. So we have certain distributors that might look after us for Sobeys. Certain distributors look after us for independent stores. So we have different distribution models, but we definitely learned a lot over the years about how to go to market with it. Definitely had a lot of mistakes, and we've done a lot of things right, but we've learned from those mistakes and changed gears and do it a little different.
What's one of your biggest early mistakes that you'd want to share with us?
I'm trying to think let's go back. I'll use Newfoundland, for instance. That was a very costly mistake, just because I already mentioned that one. You know, probably calculating a little more. Sometimes, you know, you calculate things, but then sometimes you just go with it. And I think you need to take a step back sometimes and think about, you know, what the ramifications of a decision is going to be. I mean, we make, you know, hundreds of decisions every day, But on some of the big ones, I think maybe, you know, looking back, we should have thought about it a little more in depth than what we did, because it was such a big cost outlay to go there. So I would say that definitely is the one. You know, having having a good people in your finance team to be on top of numbers all the time, watch numbers, is definitely another for sure.
Yeah, it's a super competitive world for you guys in the chip space. I can only imagine competing with Lay's and Doritos. People seem to always want to support local. And how has that overall affected your business with, you know, competing with the big dogs and margins and stuff like that?
Yeah, look, we're definitely a small piece in the overall cog. There's all the chip companies now, the majority of them are all billion-dollar companies, and there's acquisitions going on every month, you know, in the U.S. and being bought out in large companies. And but what I tell our team here is, you know, we should be proud, everybody here, that we're able to compete in rural New Brunswick in a little small town with these billion-dollar companies. And we're doing a great, you know, been very successful with it. You know, we're still here. You know, we're innovating all the time, coming up with new products, different products. And, you know, it's about getting people to understand that we are farm to table. You know, we don't have a massive, you know, marketing budget. We do as much as we can. Our social media presence is growing a lot the last couple of years. Our team's done a great job there. And that's definitely a big help. But it's getting people to understand that, you know, we grow the potatoes, we make the potato chips, and, you know, we're from Canada and we're from the Maritimes and we're from a small rural area.
So why don't we chat about the East Coast Chips partnership?
Awesome, for sure.
Throw them over, Brad. All right, so if you guys haven't tried these yet, these are the East Coast Chips. We've partnered up with Covered Bridge to release these thick-cut sea salt chips. They're available across Canada and online. They're sold in Sobeys, Kent Homes, Needs Convenience Store, Home Sense, Bed Bath & Beyond. Who am I missing here, Ryan?
Most places in the Maritimes, for sure.
And then in Quebec, there's Marché Adani, Marché Tau, and then I've heard they're in Texas as well. Yeah.
Does Avril have them in Quebec yet?
I think so. Sure. Yeah, Nick said that on our last call that they picked them up. And yeah.
Look, we're still pushing them out. Actually, we're going to be doing another run here because I think we are down to like zero in the warehouse right now. So
yeah, they've been flying off
the
shelf.
They've been going really well. We've been super happy with it. It was great working with, our team had such a blast working with your team on this project. It was a lot of fun. And we obviously wanted to do something different when we launched, when we had these compared to our regulars. And we normally do our dark russet. So with this, we use a specific variety of white potato that has a really great flavor. And then it's thicker, like you mentioned. It's got a harder bite and harder crunch. And then we just sprinkle sea salt on it. So the product tastes amazing, and Cobrand is such a great initiative for the both of us.
Oh yeah, they're delicious. Definitely have been eating a lot of these. I've been on my bike trying to burn them off a lot lately, and we can just kind of tell the people that we've got something new in the works, but we can't tell them the flavor yet. But did you want to touch on that one?
Yeah, so because of the great success with this first item, we've got a second one coming out within about a month. Yeah, so it's can't say exactly what it is, but it's our brand, your brand, and another great Maritime brand. And the flavor is something that you would eat at a restaurant or something when maybe you go out for bite D.
There we go. That's
some
good.
Is that close enough?
Those are some great hints for you guys. Let us know what you think the new flavor is. It'll be out this summer, limited batch. We know you're going to love it. It's an amazing flavor of chips, and there's nothing like this on the shelves, guys.
Yeah, we're super excited to see it, and we'll be making that pretty soon. In the upcoming couple of weeks, we'll be making it.
Please send the first samples our way when you can.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm going to trade you for the new iced teas.
Oh, we got a deal there. We got a deal. And for all those young entrepreneurs or business people listening, what would that one piece of advice be that you'd want to give them?
You know, don't... when somebody tells you, you know, you can't, you don't always have to listen to them, you know, shoot down your idea. Just make sure that when you go into it, you're going to put everything into it, give it your all, be tenacious, be aggressive, don't be down on yourself. There's going to be good days and bad days. When you have the bad days, remember there's a good day ahead. And when there's a good day, don't forget that there's something else that can go wrong, but it's part of the excitement and the journey of being an entrepreneur and doing something on your own, building something from nothing. It's exciting. It's a journey of life. There's going to be ups and downs, but make sure you enjoy that wave up and down as you go through your journey.
Love that advice. It's all about the process, eh? Positivity.
Yep. Just like the process of making chips.
Exactly. It's always a great time. So what are you doing outside of work right now? What are your hobbies?
We've had this conversation before. You used to have a VW bus.
Yeah.
You guys did. Yeah. So actually, coincidentally, next week on Thursday, we have a VW bus. We're going to take it for a few days with the dogs and we're going to do a loop around the province. So we're actually going to drive clear around the coast of the province up north and all the way down the other side and take in all the beauty New Brunswick has to offer and just pull up and park and camp wherever we feel tired or feel like it at the time, I guess.
Man, that's nice. That's the dream right there. What are your favorite places to stop in New Brunswick? If you could name maybe three spots that are your top three.
Besides Covered Bridge Chips
in Harlan, yeah.
Okay. for me, it's the scenic drives. It's just going through the back country, all the little country roads and getting up close to the water, like down through the eastern part, down along the water, going through Shediac, looping down around the Bay of Fundy over to St. Andrews, just really taking in just the natural beauties. It's not necessarily specific one or two places. It's just everywhere. And I literally have been, as you set up stores and over the years, I've been fortunate that I've been to every little nook and cranny. Last fall, though, one of the only places I hadn't been in the Maritimes was actually the Cabot Trail.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah, last summer I took a weekend and I went down with the Volkswagen bus and did a loop. And some of those hills were a little scary in a 1976 bus.
76, nice. I was going to ask what year it is. Yeah, that's a beauty.
Yeah, 76. I'll get some pictures next weekend for you.
That's awesome.
Make you miss yours, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, we got to get you some East Coast gear for that road trip when you go around New Brunswick.
Absolutely, yeah, no, for sure.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, that's what we're doing. And then we like to spend some time around the water in the summertime and just enjoy with family and friends.
That's wicked. Yeah, I can't wait till we've been in this tight bubble here in Nova Scotia where we're like not really allowed to leave our community and stuff until June 14th, I believe. So I'm looking forward to hopefully getting up to Cape Breton soon and getting some.
Is that when the next lift is going
to
be?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Fingers are crossed that we're allowed to do stuff again this summer, like go to Cape Breton and adventure around. But for the Westphalia lift.
We're hoping that it'll open back up so we can at least come into Nova Scotia and PEI. And
we want to come back to that factory and eat some more chips.
That's right. Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Do you have plans for your pop-up shop? Is that still going to be a thing this summer or?
Yeah, right now it's been a weird one where we're really trying to figure out which events we're going to be able to go to coming into July and August. It doesn't look too promising right now. The pop-up shop hasn't moved in over a year. So we invested in this big pop-up shop that was pretty expensive right before COVID hit, and then it's been pretty much standstill since it all hit the fan. So we're hoping that everything gets back to normal soon. We can get out to those small towns and get to those events again.
Yeah. There won't be I don't think Quebec and Ontario will be open back up to the Maritimes this summer. It doesn't look that way anyway, at least hopefully with the Maritime bubble, it'll help people at least start moving around and get people traveling, away from their house. And, definitely the tourism dollars are definitely being missed throughout everywhere in the Maritimes. It's been pretty pretty tough on a lot of companies for sure.
Definitely. Well, hopefully the light's at the end of the tunnel here, and we can't wait to come down to New Brunswick and see you guys again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mallory and I definitely need a trip down to see your place once things open back up here again.
Oh, absolutely. Looking forward to it. Bring the Westphalia too.
Yeah, we'll camp right in your parking lot.
Oh, yeah, you're always welcome. Just bring some chips. We'll do a trade.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Ryan, for being on the East Coast Podcast, Episode 3. Really appreciate your time and hearing your story. Be sure to follow Covered Bridge on social media and stay tuned for our next flavor of the East Coast chips, guys. Cheers.
Thanks a lot, Alex. It's been a blast.
Thanks, Ryan. Take care, man.